When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
How do you even know that learning has happened in your workshop or your visit or your residency? And this is something that if you followed the link in my episode on lesson plans to, you know, watch the video webinar that I led for the Ohio Arts Council on how to develop lesson plans, you probably saw this idea, you were encountering this idea of outcomes. Outcomes are like, students could be able to do this after my workshop. The student will demonstrate an understanding of X principle. The student will have completed an 8-page mini comic and be able to explain their creative choices within, right? So that's a measurement. And that's a measurement that you establish upfront to the hosting organization who's hiring you to lead a workshop or class. Now, why is this important? Well, one that is probably pretty obvious is that if somebody's going to hire you, they want to know that you can do what you propose to do. And in the case of being a teaching artist, it's to provide rich, meaningful experiences for students and hopefully assist if it's a classroom, assist the teacher in their ongoing work, integrating the arts into their education, or if it's the case of a one-off workshop at a place like a library, you have to be able to promise them that people are going to be different after they encounter your event. I feel very strongly about this, and I'm very serious when I say that, like, a teaching artist's job is to literally change lives. Now, that sounds grandiose, right? Well, in the same way that being an artist is grandiose, because you're saying that, hey, here's how I think things could be and should be, right? That's why you're making your work, at least implicitly. You know, you're reflecting back on the world and saying, like, here's how I see things. There's a certain level of grandiosity in that. But I would push back on the word grandiose and try to diminish it somewhat, because these changes don't have to be huge. These changes are often very incremental. You're not turning a criminal into a saint through your art workshop. You could. It's possible. But, you know, it's like that's probably on the periphery of probability, right? So establishing some outcomes or imagining some outcomes and being able to explain them to the hosting organization who is paying your fee, I think that's a reasonable ask, right? You're justifying the time that they're spending preparing for your visit, the money they're going to pay you to do the visit, and you're justifying the time of the people who showed up. You know, I did a Lead in Tarcast recently where I expressed some frustration and bristling at people who show up to events and sort of, I think they're trying to put on an air of casualness when they say this, but they openly admit that they've done zero prep for this presentation, this talk, this event. I was too busy playing video games last night, so I didn't do any prep, so I'm just going to wing it. And that vibe may work for some people, but for me, it just says, like, it translates to, I have no respect for my audience, so I'm just going to show up and just wing it. Now, I show up and wing it a lot, but I show up and wing it, and I don't tell the audience that I'm doing it, not because I'm lying, but because it's... I want them to understand that I'm giving them my all. And when I'm winging it, I'm giving it my all. Again, going to that tool bag of pre-designed bits that I talked about a few episodes ago. So when I'm winging it, I'm not really winging it. I'm sort of like assembling pre-constructed modules on the fly, right? And that may be what the people who I've seen say, like, well, I've done zero prep for this. Maybe that's what they're doing too. But it just seems a strange way to start a conversation with somebody. Anyway, my point is that, there's a justification that needs to happen in order to establish trust, in order to make sure that everybody is on the same page and motivated for this event that's going to happen. And I really do firmly believe that it's the teaching artist's job to walk in the room with the intent of changing lives in some way. Now, besides establishing outcomes in your lesson plan, what are some other ways that you could, like, prove that learning has happened? right? Let's say that you showed up in the workshop's objective or the outcome that you described to the hosting org is that everybody's going to have an 8-page mini comic done. And things go sideways fast, which can happen in a workshop event. And I'm promising you that if you embrace the improvisational aspect of this, this part can actually be very thrilling. This is when it turns into a little bit of like an acrid kind of fear in the back of the throat kind of thing, mixed with an exhilaration of like, ah, I'm being tested. And this is when I get to find out if my skills are as good as I think they are. Sometimes they're not. I've had classes go sideways and I walk out and I say like, I think I just babysat today. I don't think I actually taught anybody anything. I don't know. But anyway, it goes sideways and you realize quickly, we are not going to meet our objective. We're not going to have an 8-page mini comic done today. What then? Well, there's other ways to prove that learning happened in the room, right? So when you're doing your interactive talking with the students about the different approaches and the sort of the big ideas behind your art, what excites you about it, what thrills you about it, and what are some of the fundamental principles that you have observed and would like them to engage with, when they're working and you see the student inferring something, they're guessing at something on the page or on the canvas or some way, they're guessing at something that that proves the point you were trying to make at the outset. And what I do in those instances is I lean in close, I'm like, hey, why did you do it this way and not that way? You know, why did you make this panel big instead of small? Well, I wanted this panel to be really important and I wanted it to feel really loud, you know, like, and they hold their arms out and make a gesture, you know? I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Do you mind if I share that with the room? And they'll give me their permission or not. If they don't, I don't take it any further. But if they give me their permission, I run up to the front of the room and I say, I just saw something really exciting in one of the students I was working on. Sometimes I'll ask the permission to actually name them, but and I'll gauge this. I feel this out. Like if the student feels especially shy and it's kind of hard to get them to like reveal their inner thoughts on this stuff, I won't name them, but I will honor what they've done. And I will say to the room, wow, look at what they did. And I'll like demo it on the dry erase board. They did it like this. And I thought like, why wouldn't they do it the other way? Why wouldn't they make this panel small? Why would they make this panel big? And the kids will interact with me and they'll say like, well, because the big one feels more important. Okay. So in other words, size makes us feel things. Isn't that fascinating? And you're already doing it. You're doing it intuitively and naturally. You already know how to do this, right? And then I let them get back to work. So I look for those teachable moments while the students are working on the stuff. And when I see something that shows, that demonstrates an understanding of the key ideas that are really the core of what the lesson plan is, making a mini comic is a measurable objective, but it only means so much unless you've demonstrated also that there's some thought that goes into the choices they made on the page. So if you find yourself where your objective is out of reach, another thing to go to prove that learning happened in the room was engage in individual conversations, measure in the moment to see if it's something that the student feels comfortable sharing with the room. Because another thing you can even have them do is if they're an especially outgoing or rambunctious student, have them get to the front of the room and demonstrate it for everybody. But if they're a very shy student, then you demonstrate it. Either way, you are showing your hosting organization that learning is happening and you're letting the students own the learning that's happening. That's powerful stuff. And that's what gets you rehired. And that's what makes the students feel really lifted and celebrated by your presence. And they want you to come back and they'll sign up for more of your classes. Obviously, that's not the reason why. You do it because it's the right thing to do. But it turns out that being a kind and supportive person has practical benefit. Okay, I'm done. This is part of the Art Sound Off Challenge, artsoundoff.com. Me and my buddy Rob Stenzinger are challenging ourselves and by extension everybody else to check in over the month of November with an audio journal about your art. You don't have to share it, but if you do, please use the Art Sound Off hashtag so everybody can follow along. I'll be back tomorrow with another Thunder Punch Daily. Until then, remember, everybody.
Today we learned about the value of trying, even when the odds are against you. Sometimes when people around us aren't playing by the rules or the job seems too big, it's easy to become discouraged. But that's when you really have to stick with it and keep trying, because that's how winners are born. So whether you're playing a game or doing your schoolwork, no matter how far behind you think you are, don't give up. Remember, you can't win if you don't try. See you next time.